It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya, the end of a long-ass West Coast trip is upon us. No more staying up late. And the New York Mets complete the West Coast trip with what I really think was a much-needed victory. You play 162 games. There are going to be a lot of games over a long-ass season. Some are wins, some are losses, and some are more important than others. And I think because of the losing streak, because of losing the finale to the Dodgers at the end of the three-game series, losing the first two to San Francisco, which we'll get into, I viewed the game on Wednesday afternoon, the finale of this West Coast trip, the finale of this three-game series, as one of those games that means just a little bit more, and the Mets were able to come through. We'll break down this series. We'll look ahead to what's coming up on this homestand against the St. Louis Cardinals. We'll take a listen to some of your voicemails. We'll read some of your emails, but we appreciate you downloading, listening, liking, and subscribing to Rico Bronya. So where do we begin? Here's where we begin. I've always believed that the most important thing during a baseball season, after you have a winning streak, because everybody has a winning streak, even the crappiest teams in baseball will have a winning streak. The question is, when that winning streak ends, what do you do? Do you respond with a losing streak and basically throw all the good that you put together away? Or do you respond by just playing good baseball? By just winning a game, losing a game, winning three, losing a game. And so after the Mets winning streak finally ended on Sunday afternoon against the Dodgers, and you heard it on the Rico, if you listen to that episode or you go back to the archives, it was one of those losses that you accepted. One of those losses where you said, I get it. You ran into a really good pitcher in Tyler Glasnow. You already won the series against LA. You've won six in a row. It happens. You're not going to win 18 games in a row. And then you get to Monday. And Monday's game was kind of one of those games you're just walking through the night. You're getting shut down again, this time by Keaton Wynn, which you feel a little dirtier about because Keaton Wynn is not Tyler Glasnow. And you do nothing offensively. And you run yourself out of an inning, like we saw with Starling Marte in the first inning. You fall behind because your starting pitching is mediocre. See Jose Quintana. And you lose a game. And you say, all right, it's two in a row. It's not the end of the world. And then you get to Tuesday night. And Tuesday night was sort of similar to Sunday in that, all right, you ran into a really good starting pitcher in Logan Webb. But as this game was going on Tuesday night, and the Mets not only did nothing against Logan Webb, they were not even making him break a sweat. And that's a part of why you want a guy like Logan Webb on your team in this modern age of baseball, because he'll strike guys out, but he'll also get some very quick outs on weak contact, on weak ground balls to shortstop, and weak ground balls to second base. And so even though I know the Mets weren't giving up, I think that's an overstatement, the Mets looked lifeless. And a part of the why they looked lifeless is because, much like Sunday against LA, they ran into a really good starting pitcher. The good news was Luis Severino was matching him pitch for pitch for pitch. And then I made a mistake. I made a big, big, big freaking mistake. Pete Hoffman probably doesn't know about the mistake because he was at the Ranger game and he was having a damn good time watching the New York Rangers defeat the Washington Capitals.
But do you know, Pete, the mistake that I made in the midst of the Mets-Giants game on Tuesday night? Are you aware of it?
Though I may have been at the Ranger game, I still am very into my social media, unfortunately, and I saw the mistake.
Now, I ask you, before I explain the mistake to those who listen to the Rico and are not paying attention to social media, good for you, by the way, did you realize the mistake before it became officially a mistake, or did you see the mistake and then say, uh-oh, this is going to be a mistake?
I saw the mistake. I didn't think it was a mistake, but then got in the car because I think the game had ended by the time this had started to begin the process.
Yes.
But by the time I got in the car, it was already, you know what?
It was already a mistake. So, look, I can't help myself. I can't. Even though we've witnessed Johan Santana, even though we witnessed the combined no-hitter of 2022, something comes around me or above me or all over me whenever the New York Mets are flirting even the littlest, tiniest bit with a no-hitter or, dare I say, a perfect game. And Luis Severino was incredibly dominant. He was great, man. And he made, you know, there was some good defense behind him. Brett Beatty made a tremendous diving play to end the second inning. But Luis Severino looked really, really sharp. And after he struck out Jorge Soler in the fourth inning and he had retired 12 in a row, I made a decision. I said to myself, I want to look out for people because there are many people who are Met fans, but maybe they're a little bit more casual. You know, maybe they're a little bit more, I don't need to see every freaking pitch. And maybe they have no idea that Luis Severino's retired 12 in a row. Kind of like last year, there may have been some cash Yankee fans that didn't know Domingo Herman had retired 12 in a row. And so the reason I went to social media to say, hey, Luis Severino looks really, really, really good, I'll leave it at that, was it was my Morse code with everyone else to say, hey, if you're not watching the Met game, it may behoove you to tune in because Luis Severino is pitching really, really well. So I did it, A, because I looked out for everybody else without saying it. And B, I did it because I was giddy. I mean, I love pitching. Pitching is my favorite thing about baseball. If you gave me the perfect game to watch, it would probably be a 1-0 game or a 2-1 game. And trust me, there's a difference between a 1-0 game that features dominant pitching and a 1-0 game that just features inept offense. Because we've seen all of that as Met fans. But I did think over the first four innings on Tuesday night, Logan Webb was utterly brilliant for San Francisco, and Luis Severino was utterly brilliant for the Mets. What I should have realized as soon as I sent out that Morse code to everybody out there is that things were going to turn. And they turned very, very quickly. And they started off so innocently because he was ahead of Michael Conforto in the bottom of the fifth inning, 0-2. And Conforto blooped it to center field. He did not even hit the ball that hard. So when Severino gave up his first hit, I kind of shrugged my shoulders like, all right, not overly concerned. Not the worst thing in the world. As long as you can get through this inning, I won't feel like I did something really bad. Because to me, it's not about jinxing the mistake if you believe in jinxes. It's not jinxing a no-hitter or a perfect game. It's more, don't let this game get ugly. Don't let this turn into an average performance by Luis Severino. And then he gave up a base hit to Matt Chapman. And now I was concerned. Because now, two on and nobody out, bottom of the fifth inning, the way the Mets could not figure out Logan Webb, anytime they would get a base hit, it would be erased really quickly by weak ground balls, including a double play that was hit into by the great Francisco Lindor. He got Patrick Bailey out. There's one out. I'm like, all right, I think we may get through this. And then Tyro Estrada rips a base hit up the middle, in which both runners advance because of the throw to the plate. And then Mike Yastrzemski hits a two-run single. And all of a sudden, it went from this is a really, really special performance to the Mets are down 3-0, and it really feels like 8-0. And it did. I mean, that deficit felt enormous. Now, I give Luis Severino credit for this. He was able to get out of the inning without any more damage being imposed on him. And then he pitched the sixth inning. And it wasn't an easy sixth inning because he put the leadoff man on. They were two on and one out. And he was able to make some big pitches to get through it. And I thought that was important because the Mets just do not get a lot of innings out of their starting pitching. So I give Seve a little bit of credit for the fact that he finished strong. And look, here's the truth. When we talked at the beginning of this season about what the Mets are going to have to do to be a good baseball team, what I laid out was their starting pitching is never going to be great. I don't think it's going to be great. But if it can be average, I believe enough in this offense and this bullpen where they can win plenty of games. On Tuesday night, their starting pitching did its job. Six innings, three runs. Granted, that's a 4.5 ERA, but in the modern age, six innings, three runs is fine. And if we get that, that should be good enough on most nights. The problem is, it's two parts. Problem one, Logan Webb is good. I have deep respect for him. He's one of the better, more reliable pitchers in all of baseball. And problem number two is the Met bats couldn't do anything. And that's where I struggle sometimes. When you get shut down by Keaton Wynn, it's easy to say, hey, this offense sucks and it needs to be better. And by when I say offense sucks, I don't mean in general. I mean that day, the offense sucked. When you get shut down by Logan Webb, when you get shut down by Tyler Glasnow, there's a part of me that says, hey, those are really good pitchers you got shut down by. But then the other part of me says, you're professional. Can you scratch out a couple of runs? Because if you scratch out a couple of runs and you get to the Giant bullpen in the seventh inning and it's 3-2 instead of 3-0 and you get Logan Webb out of the game before the ninth inning, you actually have a half a chance. So it's frustrating, Pete, because I have a tough time determining between, hey, they lost to a really good pitcher, get over it, versus can you show something against a really good pitcher? Because it can change the game, especially when you get a quality start.
The bats seemed to be, it's almost seemed like the Dodgers series was like, they took everything out of them to win those first two games. They got shellacked on Sunday. And then it's like, they lost all their energy. The endorphins went down. And they just had nothing because both pitchers were, I mean, the Mets basically scored, what, one realistic run, a home run by Pete Alonso. Everything else was waste time. You know, ninth inning, not even close.
Well, I will say this about the ninth inning. And the ninth inning was very peculiar of Tuesday night's game because and this usually happens at the end of a West Coast trip. And I admit that this West Coast trip was not as brutal on sleep habits as others, because Friday night was West Coast game number one, not too bad. Saturday and Sunday were day games, so not bad at all. And then Monday was a late night game. And now Tuesday, the game we're talking about, was the third late night game, but you had a weekend mixed in. So it wasn't the worst when it comes to sleep, but it wasn't great. But for me, and maybe it's my age, maybe it's working in the afternoons and getting home late, maybe it's having two kids. In the bottom of the eighth inning of Tuesday night's game, I shut the scorebook. And what I did was I laid down. And I said, I will watch the ninth inning at 5-0 because you never know, it's baseball. It's the beauty of the game. But I got to shut my scorebook because I'm exhausted. I just can't do it anymore. And so Tyler Rogers comes in the game. The Mets start rallying. And I fall asleep. And that's a rarity. I bring it up because I don't do it very often. I just absolutely passed out. And I'm trying to remember like when in the ninth inning, maybe it was right after Pete Alonso doubled. I don't know, because I didn't see much and I passed out. And because I'm a sick F, a really sick F, I woke up about 2 hours later in a cold sweat thinking, I wonder if they rallied. Because I do love this sport and we've seen such crazy games. And a part of me thought, but if they rallied and won, how did I not do a Rico? Hoffman's going to kill me. Could you imagine those YouTube numbers and downloads that day? So I go to my phone and I see they lost 5-1. But now I'm like, oh, they scored a run. Let me see what happened. So I go back and watch it that Alonso doubled. Brett Beatty got a hit. Jeff McNeil got a hit. And they were a batter away from getting the tying run to the plate, but they never did it. Joey Wendell struck out. Omar Narvaez grounded out. They never got there. So I was like, all right, good. I'm glad I went to sleep because I'd have been frustrated. It was pitching changes. Camilo Duvall came into the game. It was busy, and it would have taken a long time for the inevitable to end of the Mets losing. But what I ask the Met fan out there who stayed up and did not fall asleep, we've marveled at the team showing guts and fighting back. Does that ninth inning effort count as a comeback, as a fight? They got the tying run on deck, which here's what it means. It means it's a save situation. It's why Camilo Duvall got a save, because when the tying run's on deck, it actually counts as a save situation. So the Mets showed you a little bit, but did that count fully as a comeback, as a, hey, they showed some guts, they were fighting?
I can't give you that, especially because I was up, I was watching the game. Pete Alonso didn't do anything too crazy to, like, you know, it wasn't like a rip shot down the line. I never really thought that they were really, even when they brought in Duvall, I never really thought that they were really in the game. And again, maybe it's because to me, the Giants are just so boring, and that's why you fell asleep, because the Giants are so boring. Or maybe it's because we're getting old.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of getting. It's not the Giants being boring. I think that
they are.
We're getting old, and late night games are tough. I mean, I appreciate the pitch clock because it makes it a little bit better, but the late night games are getting very, very tough.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I was looking back, seeing, oh, wow, if they had gotten a guy on, the tying run would have been Brandon Nimmo. And considering how lost Brandon Nimmo's at the plate, maybe that would have been his big moment. Either way, you lose three in a row. You get shut down by two really good pitchers. You also get shut down by a not really good pitcher in Keaton Winn. And that is why I viewed Wednesday, and I said this on the air right before the game on the Fan with Tiki. I said, Tiki, it's one of those games that matters a little bit more. This will change not only my mood, but I think Met fans' moods going into the off day and going into the homestand. If you lose this game to San Francisco and get swept, and now it's a four-game losing streak, and now you had a 2-4 West Coast trip, and now you're back at 500, I think all the gremlins come back out. All the rats come back out. See, this team stinks. They're not that good. It's this guy's fault. It's that guy's fault. David Stearns is an idiot. I think it puts a paw on the good that they did with the victories in LA. Then you get the news that Blake Snell has been scratched. And I did think that was a great break for the Mets, despite Snell's struggles. Granted, Blake Snell had been off to a terrible, terrible start with San Francisco. Plus, you get Lindor from the right side. I could see that being a perk. But at the end of the day, it's a bullpen game. And I would much rather, take my chances with a bullpen game with the Giants versus Blake Snell, who's due to turn things around. So I thought the Mets got a huge break with the news that Snell was out, but even more so, they had to win this game. And when I say they have to win this game, I know that's hyperbolic. Okay, well, what if they lose? My dad always would say that to me. Okay, great, if they have to win. What if they lose? Well, what if they lose? The season isn't over, but it would suck. I mean, that's the answer. It would suck. This would be a very different Rico today if they lost. The emails we'll read later would be very different if they lost. Our mood going into Friday night against St. Louis would be very different if they lost. I think a lot of us would question, maybe they're not that good. And I know that's crazy off of one game, but I do think there are certain games that swing a lot. And this swung a lot from a four-game losing streak to a, hey, this was a good road trip. And what swung this is twofold. When you look at Wednesday's victory, 8-2 over the Giants, twofold, threefold, really. Number one, Sean Manaea, and I give Sean Manaea a lot of credit for something he said after the game. So obviously this game is on while we're on the air, so can't score it, can't analyze it the way I normally analyze games because I'm half watching it. But it did allow me to listen to the post game on my ride back from work. And Sean Manaea had the greatest description to describe his performance. He said, this was one of the worst, best outings I've ever had. And what he means by that is if you watch the game, he put a million guys on base. So that's the bad. The bad is he's behind every hitter. The bad is he walked four guys in 4 2/3 innings. That's the bad. The good is he gave up zero runs. The good is that he was able to fight out of a bases loaded, nobody out jam. Now, he didn't get the opportunity to get through the fifth inning because Carlos Mendoza pulled him. More on that in a few minutes. But Sean Manaea described it great. It was terrible and it was great. Because at the end of the day, your job is to not give up runs. Sean Manaea didn't give up any runs. But the bad is he put a million guys on base. So number one, Sean Manaea, specifically early in this game, was able to wiggle his way out of trouble. That second inning was huge. It's still 0-0. The bases are loaded and nobody out. This game could turn into 3-0 real quick. He got Estrada to pop up. He got Fitzgerald to pop up. He got Nick Ahmed to fly out. That was monstrous. That's one fold. Here's twofold. Francisco Lindor. Francisco Lindor needs to get going. And what's so weird about where he is this season is it looked like he was getting going. Like it looked like he had gotten hot. In fact, on the last Rico, we read that email from a fan who said, hey, the standing ovation clearly worked. Look at his numbers since. And he was right. Like Lindor was showing a pulse. He was starting to give you some signs that he was breaking out of what had been a season-long slump. And then he got cold again. I mean, really in San Francisco. He goes 0-7 with 4 strikeouts. He's killing every freaking rally. And so you're almost reevaluating, like, what the hell just happened? Now, granted, it was only a 2-game sample size, but he went from really heating up in Los Angeles to really cooling off in San Francisco. So now you're like, is he out of it? I thought he was out of it. Is he out of it? And he certainly isn't out of it left-handed. That home run he hit in the third inning was a big home run. And I say that was a big home run because, and I mentioned this on a previous Rico, what's a big hit? What's a meaningless hit? Third inning of a 0-0 game on a Wednesday afternoon in San Francisco may not sound like a big hit. But again, if you know, you know. This was an important baseball game. You're in a bullpen game versus the Giants. Sean Manaea just got lucky as you know what to get out of a bases loaded, nobody out jam. Francisco Lindor's home run in the third inning was a big home run. That's why numbers lie. They lie to you sometimes. Unfortunately, it's about watching. And that can be a pain in the ass because life gets in the way. I almost need to write down like, oh, that was a big home run, because I'll forget, you know, come July when someone says Lindor is in clutch, every home run's with a big lead. I got to remind myself, well, he did hit that big home run in the third inning in San Francisco back in the late April. But that was a big home run because it kind of took the pressure off. Then Tyrone Taylor, who does not get enough credit for how awesome he's been, Tyrone Taylor hits a home run. Then Tyrone Taylor drives in two more. And then, yes, Lindor hit a home run in the ninth inning, which is so typical. Oh, that doesn't count. But you know what? It was 6-1 at the time. It is the ninth inning. You do have a fresh bullpen, so Diaz is going to come in. It's baseball. It's not like I'm up 13-1. But more than Lindor hitting that second home run, he went 4-for-5. He raised his batting average to .206. So, look, does this mean he won't go 0-for-11 at home against St. Louis? Baseball is a crazy, crazy sport. Just because he hit this game doesn't mean he's going to hit against Miles Michaelis on Friday night. But it was definitely a very, very good sign to get Lindor going. And they did it with Brandon Nimmo still not getting going. That's the next guy we got to start to worry about, right? If we're worrying about Francisco Lindor, when do we ask Brandon Nimmo to get a base hit once in a while? Like, are we allowed to ask that question, Hoff? I know he's your boy. Don't tell me you want to bat him ninth.
Well, listen, at this point in time, you might have to. But let's be serious. There's two guys that if you're going to start to question, we're going to go through the rounds of who else needs to start hitting. Who's the guys that we don't have to question? Starling Marte and Pete Alonso. Like, that's the one thing. Pete Alonso, I know, maybe didn't start as average-wise. He hit some home runs to begin with, but now he's batting up for, 260 again. He's there. Like, I have to tip my cap to him. He got – last year, he struggled basically all season long. He couldn't find his groove. He got hurt. He's not struggling. And that you tip the cap to, especially in the walk year, like we always say. Yeah, Nimmo, I'd like him to join the party too.
Yeah, Nimmo but you know what? The Mets won a game they needed to win. They scored 8 runs. He was on base twice with walks. That's the one positive about Brandon Nimmo, that even when he's not hitting like this, he still finds a way to get on base. He can draw walks. But you win and you do it despite key players not performing well. That's a good thing, because you just got to find ways to bank those W's. Now, I want to get to Mendoza's decision-making, specifically to take Sean Manaea out of the game in the 5th inning. I freaking loved it. I mean, look, I no longer live in a world, none of us should live in a world in which we care about wins. They don't really matter. And I think when you're viewing that situation with two guys on base and two outs in a game that's still, you know, it's 6-0, I understand, but it's the 5th inning. You know what I mean? So I'm still going for the kill. I'm still in that mode of, I can't worry about a guy's stat. I can't worry about, I got to go get the outs to kind of hold San Francisco down. And despite Manaea getting the big outs all day long, I can't trust him in that spot. He's thrown a million pitches. It's a right-hand hitter in Jorge Soler with a couple of guys on base. And the best part of what Mendoza had, and we've seen how he's managed over the last few days, where sometimes the situation dictates if a guy's going to stay in the game or not. We talked about that with Adrian Hauser over the weekend. He had a tired bullpen. Hauser should have come out of the game. And basically, Mendy says, screw it. I got to get some more innings out of my starter. In this case, he has a fresh bullpen, and he has an off day on Thursday. So knowing he's got everybody available, why not go to your best reliever? And he goes to Reed Garrett. And what a weapon Reed Garrett is now. He is such a fierce weapon. And he comes in and he gets Jorge Soler out on one pitch. He pitches a nice, easy, breezy, clean 6th inning. Then he runs into trouble in the 7th, first time he looked human. But how great did Reed Garrett look in the moment where the Mets needed him the most in that 5th inning? He is, through 24 games, the MVP of the New York Mets. Through 24 games. Now, that's going to change. I get it. But through 24 games, what a freaking weapon this guy is. How long is this going to last? I don't know. By the way, you can buy the jersey. I went to MLB.com. You can actually buy anybody on the 40-man roster's jersey. You can buy, I saw it. So you want to go get a Jose Budo jersey, it's right there for you. Adrian Hauser, same thing, Hoff. You get them all.
Oh, wait. Can I ask you a question, though? Serious. If I wanted to, is there a way to get Michael Tonkin?
there was about 3 days ago. I don't know. I'm not sure anymore. But great job by Reed Garrett, who continues to be a weapon. He gave up his first run of the year, the home run to Fitzgerald. Adam Ottavino continues to be really, really sharp. SNY flashed up a stat that Adam Ottavino has not been 2-0 on a hitter all season long. So Ottavino has been really good. And look, Edwin Diaz had his issues in the 9th inning, but that's all about getting working. You know, it's the far opposite of a couple of days ago when the Mets had this overworked bullpen with nobody available. Now they're wrapping up this series with an off day on Thursday. And basically Carlos Mendoza's thinking to himself, let me get everybody in there. And it was an important win and a good win. And I think we as Met fans can feel pretty good about what happened on this West Coast trip. Because going into this thing, 3-3 was fine. I remember even saying, you know what? 2-4 is not the end of the world. Because at least you come back and you're at 500. That changes when you win the first two games. That's the thing. We'll do this for this upcoming homestand where you say, oh, they're playing 7 games. I hope they go 5-2. Yeah, until they win the first 5. Then you're annoyed if they go 5-2. So it was similar on this West Coast trip. 3-3 was always acceptable, but I think when you win the first two games, especially against the Dodgers, and especially the way they did it, your brain starts to move towards, hey, 2-0 against the Dodgers. Can this be a real big West Coast trip? And unfortunately, it didn't happen. And there was another worry that I don't have to bring up, but I'll bring it up now. If you go back to last season, the miserable season that was 2023, and you try to recall, well, when did the season go and derail? Like, was there a moment in which things went haywire? And yeah, they had starts and stops. They had some winning streaks that made you believe, and then things fell apart. But if you recall, the New York Mets last year got off to a start in which their record was 14-7. Pretty good. 14-7. They went out west. They had a very long West Coast trip at the beginning of the season, much longer than the one they just had. They went to Oakland. They swept them. They went to Los Angeles. They won 2 out of 3. They went to San Francisco to wrap up the long road trip. And they won the first 2 games in San Francisco against the Giants. And so think about it. The Mets at this point are 7-1 on the West Coast. And we're like, oh, this is freaking amazing. This is great. They then lost the final 2 games of that road trip in San Francisco against the Giants to drop to 7-3. Still a pretty good, you know, road trip. 14-9 for the season. They actually never recovered from it. We forget about that. But then they come home, they lose 2 out of 3 to the Nationals, they lose 2 out of 3 to the Braves, they get swept in Detroit, they lose 2 out of 3 to the Rockies, they lose 2 out of 3 to the Reds, they're done. They're 18-20, and the season's derailing. So, under the radar, but the Mets season started to derail last year on a West Coast trip in April in San Francisco against the Giants, right around the same time. So, hopefully, symbolically, winning this game avoids the derailment, because if they would have lost this game and they got swept by the Giants and it was 2-4 after beginning 2-0, that would bring back some eerie similarities to the way the season derailed just a year ago. So there's your big parallel.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I looked at it last podcast when we were talking about the West Coast trip, and I saw those numbers and it scared me. I didn't want to bring it up. So I'm glad you did it, not me, because I don't want to be the jinx. But that being said, though, I don't think this team is going to allow themselves. I think overall, whether it's Carlos Mendoza, David Stearns, whomever it is, I just don't see this team. They're going to go through lulls, but they're not going to allow themselves to dip the way that last year's team was. There was something off with last year's team. Mm. We all know about it, whether it was the Scherzer stuff. And, you know, I know people say the locker room stuff, whatever the case is, this team feels different. And I think that's going to be part of Carlos Mendoza's management.
Yeah. Well, look, I think avoiding losing streaks is key. and avoiding things spiraling is key. And I think what this win did is avoided a potential spiraling. Before we get to some of your emails, therico@gmail.com, we do want to give some love to our voicemails. You can always leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 725-222-8699. So why don't we take a listen to one of your voicemails?
Hello, Rico. Evan, Pete, what in the world is Carlos Mendoza doing, pulling Mania? After a blow from a review where he has a couple minutes, he throws a perfect slider to strike out and has one out to go to finish the sixth inning. And he pulls him, pardon me, to finish the fifth. That's no way to instill confidence. Great job, guys. Talk to you later.
So I want to address a couple of things because I think Mendy did this perfectly. Perfectly. I think the matchup of Reed Garrett versus Jorge Soler was a much better matchup than letting Sean Manaea, who just threw 101 pitches, and yes, threw a very good pitch to get Conforto out. I think that's the better matchup. But here's the thing that caused that gentleman to pick up his phone. You know what caused him to do it? Because if that was the sixth inning, like he mistakenly said, he doesn't pick up the phone. If that was the fourth inning, he doesn't pick up the phone. If that was the seventh inning, he doesn't pick up the phone. What caused him to pick up the phone was the win, was the fact that we have rules in baseball, and they are archaic, that you have to pitch five innings to get a victory. So what I ask Major League Baseball to do, because it's time, is we got to throw that rule out. We do. Now, my grandfather used to suggest, the great-grandpa Bernie, my grandfather, no longer with us, used to say years and years ago, the official scorer should decide the winner every single game. And he believed that because he didn't like vulturing off of a well-pitched game. Like a closer comes in, blows the lead, then the team wins in the bottom of the inning. He gets a win. My grandpa never liked that. In the 50s, he didn't like that. So that's where he was coming from, obviously, in a different era of baseball. You want to go official score decides the win, I'm good with that. But the thing you got to get rid of is that you got to pitch five innings. Baseball isn't built that way anymore. It's just not. Starters don't even go five innings anymore. Sometimes you've got openers like you saw from San Francisco. Going five innings is so not a thing anymore. It doesn't fit the game. Like one of the arguments Howie Rose made to me, because Howie used to be just like me, pro pitcher hitting. He flipped and said, you know what? We should have a universal DH. And he actually made one of the most compelling arguments to me about the universal DH. He said, Evan, it's different now. Like pitchers aren't going deeper into games. So you're just getting pinch hitters like early on. Like hitting doesn't matter as much because, you know, starting pitchers aren't going seven or eight innings where they're getting three, four at-bats. Now they're getting one at-bat and then they're out of the game. And I said, you know what, Howie, while I don't agree about the universal DH, that's a compelling point. The game has changed. The game has changed in which we do not need to have a five-inning rule. It's gone because our voicemail guy said that doesn't instill confidence. Look, I don't know what Sean Manaea is thinking after the game. He seemed more disappointed with himself than Carlos Mendoza. But don't put something in the game that could even cause that because it's not necessary anymore. That's got to go. It's stupid. It's not needed in 2024 anymore. A, we don't even believe in wins. And then B, starting pitchers aren't going deep enough anymore to have five innings be a qualifying number.
And then the funny thing is you nailed it. You said, like, you know, have somebody, just official ruler, make, you know, pick someone that they believe gets the win. And, I mean, you gave it to Reed Garrett. Why? Because he should get the save, if anything.
So
you know what I mean?
So the rule is, and this is where it works, is that when a starter doesn't go five innings, it is up to the official scorer. Now, usually they'll go to the guy who came in, but they don't always do it. Like, could he have given it to Adam Ottavino? Sure. It's up to the official scorer. So expand that is what I would tell you. And I believe in that. In fact, I'm going to write a letter. I'm going to write a letter to Rob Manfred asking to get rid of the five-inning rule and allow official scorers to decide wins, because wins don't matter anymore. And I'm not saying that this would make it matter, but it would make it matter just a little bit more if you allowed that to happen. All right, let's get to some of your emails. Andrew writes, and this is from yesterday. This is from Tuesday. So in the midst of the losing in San Francisco. before Lindor hit two home runs on Wednesday. I understand it's early in the season and he's had some clutch hits in LA, but how much longer do we have to see Lindor struggle in the three spot before he's moved down in the order? Brandon Nimmo continues to get on base at a high clip, and Marte's been hitting, only for Lindor to squander the opportunity. I know he brings value as a switch hitter, but he's just not a guy we can have hitting in the middle of the order right now. Hopefully injecting JD Martinez into the lineup changes that dynamic and might bring an opportunity to shake things up a bit in the middle of the order. This is a reaction a lot of people have. I hear Yankee fans do it. Obviously, he's doing it with Lindor, and that's the idea. When a guy is struggling, drop him in the order. I'm not a big proponent of it, especially with veteran players and especially when it's still early in a season. Now, would there ever come a point where I say, boy, you can't hit this guy third? Of course, I'm a human. Cut me open, I bleed. I can't do that in late April with a player that has a track record of performing. If you want to move the, like, I'll give you one that I'd be okay with. And this goes back to a discussion we had during spring training about the lineup. I'm not big on Nimmo not leading off because that's his greatest attribute, getting on base. But I think you brought it up, Pete, and maybe some emailers brought it up of, hey, what about Lindor 1, Nimmo 2? It allows the chance for Lindor to steal more bases because Nimmo's such a patient hitter batting second. By the way, if that's what you want to do, if you want to take the approach with Lindor up until Wednesday when he hit two home runs, hey, you know what? I got a great way to get him going. Why not lead him off? Have him think about getting on base. Have him thinking more about quality at-bats. More opportunities to steal, especially with Brandon Nimmo batting second. I got no problem with that. Like, if that's what you wanted to do, fine. But the idea of dropping him to, like, seven because he's not hitting well, I don't love it. I think it does more harm than good. But coming off a victory and coming off a two-home run game, he ain't going anywhere. He's staying either in that two or three spot. Obviously, lately, it's been three. Michael writes, Evan and Hoff, love the pod. After the last outing where Luis Severino was cruising until giving up the pop fly single to Conforto before the wheels came off, are we at all concerned that he's been tipping pitches from the stretch again? Would like to think that issue has finally been resolved, but now I'm questioning it. I think that's a fair question, considering that Luis Severino did not work from the stretch for the first four innings because he was perfect. Then he gives up the base hit to Michael Conforto, and that's when he had his biggest struggles. Luis Severino has always been such an oddity with the Yankees, and certainly we're learning about him here with the Mets through the five starts that he's made, still a small sample size. Is he tipping pitches? Last year it felt like something was off to where he was getting destroyed the way he was. Look, it may have just been, I can't even say tiring down because his pitch count was so low. It may have just been running into bad luck, running into not executing your pitches in the fifth inning. I don't know if he was tipping his pitches, but yeah, it all went bad very quickly. But to his credit, he had to work from the stretch in the sixth inning after he put two guys on base and got two huge outs, including a great defensive play up the middle by Joey Wendell. It wasn't Jeff McNeil. I think it was Joey Wendell who made a great play because McNeil was playing left field. So we'll see. Obviously, Severino's next start will be against Chicago. Casey writes, after winning six straight, it seems like we're coming back down to earth. Despite trying to rally the last two nights, the lineup has been dreadful. Looking at this team through the first 4 weeks, I think a few things are painfully obvious. Number one, Lindor. I realize we're winning games without much contribution from Francisco, but you and I both know that's not a sustainable formula. He's a human rally killer. I don't want to hear about his low BABIP or some BS about his hard hit rate or some other nonsense. It's about results, and right now he's absolutely lost up there, especially from the left side. The team isn't good enough to handle a three-hitter batting on the interstate and leaving small armies on base every day. Maybe we can finally toss out the window this ridiculous idea about how a standing ovation actually helped. I'm not getting into the standing ovation argument anymore. I'm getting into the argument of let great players or really good players, give them time. They will eventually perform. Yankee fans are seeing that with Aaron Judge. We are starting to see that with Francisco Lindor. It is way too early to panic. I will tell you when it's time to panic. Like, I'm the authority on this. I'm not. I just know that I ain't panicking in April.
Wait, if you had this scale of 0 to 10, where would your panic meter be right now? Is it even
my panic meter is a 2. My frustrated meter was certainly getting up there. Like, I get frustrated when guys aren't hitting and armies are being left on base. I don't want to act like I'm not frustrated by it, but panicking means, oh my God, I think this is never going to turn around. And that had not happened. By the way, the second thought that Casey had is when the offense is going through these ruts, not having that shutdown stopper in the rotation is a major issue. When guys like Glasnow and Webb are on the bump for that opposition, it would be nice to have a guy to battle to a 1-0 victory. I like most of the peripheral moves Stearns has made to fortify the pitching staff, but I don't think I'll ever get over the fact that he didn't make a run at Jordan Montgomery. He was the perfect guy for this club. Obviously, getting Kodai back will be a huge addition, but I can't help but think whiffing on a legit stud will be a major bugaboo all season long. So, Casey, I agree with you and I disagree with you. I agree they don't have an ace. I don't think there are a lot of aces in Major League Baseball, if we're being fair, and I don't think Jordan Montgomery is one either. So when you say, hey, I regret them whiffing on him, yeah, the Mets would be better if Montgomery was on this team. That's not the argument. But the idea that he's that, I don't think he is. The stopper that you're describing. And again, there aren't a lot of them. You know, by the way, I would not include Tyler Glasnow in that. Tyler Glasnow needs to prove it a little bit more. He needs to be healthier a little bit more. But he definitely has the stuff to be that guy. He definitely has shown you spurts of being that guy. Logan Webb is that guy. Because Logan Webb takes the baseball every 5 days, and that matters. They do not have an ace. It sucks not having an ace. I believe the Philadelphia Phillies have an ace in Zach Wheeler. Not Aaron Nola, but yes, Zach Wheeler. The Atlanta Braves, I mean, Max Fried looked great in his last start, so maybe he can go back to being that ace. Obviously, Spencer Strider is out, but you're right. They don't have an ace. When will they get one? Not anytime soon. And lastly, we have a lot of emails, but I apologize. I can't go through all of them. I'm very, very tired. But I want to get to Dan. Dan is the guy who has become a regular contributor to the Rico as someone who's really, really negative. He's like that character from Major League 2, where he's a fan of the Cleveland Indians, but he hates the Cleveland Indians all at the same time. Dan writes, much needed win to stop the bleeding. I will say one thing they've been good at this year is taking advantages of mistakes and breaks that other teams are giving them, especially capitalizing on the Blake Snell pull. Tyrone Taylor's been awesome too. Big time Marlon Byrd vibes. Let's not bring Diaz into games anymore with a 7-run lead. Or he wrote it oddly, but that's what he meant. Now that I've given them way too much credit, it's time to find a new spot in the lineup for Brandon Nimmo. He's been atrocious this year, and I'm sorry, but a 350 on base percentage shouldn't make you an anchor in the leadoff spot, especially when you are so petrified of trying to steal that you basically don't even take a lead. When we're even discussing this before the season, and it's just becoming more evident every year, combine that with Lindor maybe being able to benefit from moving out of a power position in the order since he basically cannot get any worse, though he does have two home runs on Wednesday, they should give him a shot at leading off. Maybe that can get him to have some consistent success. Look, we talked about it earlier. That's the kind of lineup change I would not be opposed to. But I think coming off a win and coming off of Lindor getting four hits, I would call a timeout on it. I wouldn't necessarily do that now. But if you are going to make a lineup change with Lindor and Nimmo, that's exactly what I would do. I would go Nimmo 1. I'm sorry. Lindor 1, Nimmo 2, Marte 3, Alonso 4. That's how I would line it up. Or you could flip Marte and Alonso, by the way. No harm, no foul. The other thing I think they got to keep an eye on with J.D. Martinez coming back, which I'm excited to see on Friday, is Tyrone Taylor's earning at-bats. And if that means sitting Brandon Nimmo a little bit more because he's struggling, fine. If that means sitting Harrison Bader a little bit more, fine. But Tyrone Taylor against righties, too, is performing. And I think he's earning more opportunities to play. As far as this weekend is concerned, they take on the Cardinals. They have some tough pitching matchups. Miles Michaelis has not been great this year with Jose Budo on the mound Friday. They take on Sonny Gray on Saturday with Adrian Hauser and his 7.5 ERA. And then Sunday afternoon, it's Jose Quintana against Lance Lynn. I look at this 7-game homestand, St. Louis for 3, Chicago for 4, 5-2. 4-3 is okay. It's not, you know, end of the world. It's not great. But the goal is to get 5-2, 3 out of 4 from Chicago, 2 out of 3 from St. Louis. And I think we're cooking it, cooking with gas. Then I think we're feeling really good going into their next road trip, which takes them to Tampa Bay. So that's the goal. That's what we need. Go 5-2, and we're all happy. Appreciate the emails, therico@gmail.com. Appreciate the voicemail, 725-222. 8699. We got a lot more Ricos and a lot more content coming up over the next couple of days as we get set for big homestand against the St. Louis Cardinals. We appreciate you downloading and subscribing. Another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.